The page before you is intended to provide an introduction to the history of Judaism during the period which we are considering, that is to say, the first century before Christ and then the first two centuries after Christ, the period of most interest and importance for the understanding of early Christian sources. We will necessarily be reviewing these epochs of history very generally and not anywhere near in as much detail as they deserve. And so the page contains a lot of information that you can review on your own and to which we will return at other points during the consideration of the Christian sources at which we'll be looking. This page consists, first of all, and you can glance very briefly as we look down, at two timelines describing the history of the nation of Israel. The first from about 600 BC to 200 BC, the second timeline from 200 BC to 200 AD, and then a text modified from the one of the appendices in the Jerusalem Bible, which provides an excellent discussion of epochs in the history of Judaism, and you're free to review that material on your own as you wish. Some of what we'll be saying is taken from it. Below that, and even further down, is a description of the important dynasties of Roman emperors during the first two centuries of the Christian era, with particular reference to the involvement of those emperors in of the affairs of the Christian Church. We'll be referring to that material in the course of other lectures and discussions, but again, you're free to look at it here as you wish. Let's look first at the timelines. We're looking primarily in the first timeline at a reminder of the fact that when one looks at the history of the people of Israel, it's important to bear in mind, and this is especially important when one's considering such literature as the Psalms and the Pentateuch, when one encounters literature containing or imagery containing great violence, that much of this literature was written not during a period when Israel was an important world power, but during a period when Israel was a defeated subject people, effectively very often a slave people, trying to recover in its history a sense of a glorious past which did not exist at the present moment. So very often the descriptions of Israel's own violence are a kind of a wistful memory, a hearkening back to a time when the people were reminding themselves of a period when they were significant, were important, usually that very brief period during the Davidic and Solomonic monarchies, really a century only, about 1000 BC, during which Israel was a significant world power. As we're reminded in the first timeline, which doesn't carry us anywhere near that far back, Israel was subject after the period of David and Solomon to a successive series of empires which took it captive, sometimes piecemeal, sometimes in whole part, beginning with the Assyrians and the Babylonians, then the Persians, the Greeks, and finally the Romans. So Israel is primarily a subject people, and it's only during the periods when their, if you will, dominant empires, the empires that have conquered them, are themselves in a state of war or political unrest, that it's possible for Israel to reacquire something of its own previous power, with one or two exceptions, bearing in mind that following the Babylonian exile, there was a period during which Israel was evidently not only permitted but encouraged to re-enter its own traditional ancestral lands and to do so with a view to setting up its own worship. But in general, during the period that we'll be looking at, there is a tremendous sense of anger and oppression against the powers that have authority, which in the period with which we're most concerned are the Greek period and the Roman periods of domination of the Mediterranean. And during that period, although you do have the rise of the Maccabeans to a limited extent, in general what you're dealing with in the history of Israel is a priesthood and a series of nobles who are subject to a very great extent to the power of other empires, and in particular to the domination of Greek rule introduced by Alexander the Great, and then the Roman rule, which was implemented primarily during the period of Julius Caesar, but then made much tighter and more authoritative during Augustus and his Caesar successors. What we'll be looking at or reminding ourselves of are a couple of points. First, that during the period prior to the birth of Christ, because there was a considerable presence throughout the empire of Jewish communities, it was perfectly legitimate and perfectly normal for those communities to use the Greek translation of the Old Testament known as the Septuagint. This will not be normal and in fact not permissible after the tumultuous periods that follow the first and second revolts. If you look at the second timeline, during the period of eventually the destruction of the temple in 70 AD and the revolt under Bar Kokhba that culminates in the real devastation of Jerusalem in 135. During the time of the early church, prior to the destruction of the temple, during the period of the very early missionary period of the church, the Septuagint translation of the scriptures is perfectly legitimate, but later, in a kind of reactionary movement, Judaism decides that it is no longer permissible to use the Greek translation, and instead there's an increasing emphasis on the absolute necessity for every Jew to understand or to at least be able to read a certain amount of Hebrew. This is a dramatic shift within Judaism, and it occurs after the Christian church has begun to become more and more separated from Judaism. So one can say that Christianity belongs to a period in Jewish history which is left in a certain sense by the wayside, a period during which the Greek translation of the Old Testament is legitimate and even holy, following which extends really relatively down to modern times, a period which emphasizes the necessity of knowing the Hebrew text primarily. So in Christianity, in the Christian era, the Greek translation is legitimate, but following that, it is no longer so. Let's remind ourselves, first of all, of the period of Philo of Alexandria. He is listed on the second timeline. This is a period of tremendous sense of the burden of Roman oppression. Philo is a Jew living in Alexandria who, because not only the Greek translation of the scriptures, but even in his experience and in his circle, the use of Jewish philosophy is perfectly permissible as a way of understanding and applying the Jewish scriptures, as we'll see, one of his great contributions is to combine the insight and wisdom and language of Plato with a very beautiful, at that time, orthodox understanding of the Jewish scriptures that allows for an allegorical interpretation of the Old Testament biblical text. As we'll see, that is no longer permissible, especially after the Second Revolt, even after the First Revolt, and Philo will become a persona non grata, a not revered and even execrated, even despised figure, until certainly the medieval Jewish tradition and until relatively modern times. But during that era, the possibility of using the insights from Greek philosophy to explicate Jewish tradition is regarded as permissible and acceptable. It's also a period which is living with a tremendous apocalyptic fervor. A whole literature arises during this period, and considerably earlier, the book of Enoch, the more canonical book of Daniel, and the literature of the first and second books of Maccabees, but especially an apocalyptic literature, which we will see in the book of Enoch, which looks forward to the liberation of Israel from all earthly oppression and the restoration of the power and authority to which Judaism regarded itself as entitled by the hand of God himself. This period is characterized with a kind of an eschatological fervor and a fascination with ranks of angels, a sense that it's through the intermediaries of angelic figures that this restoration of Israel will take place, and also a sense that some of the responsibility for the evil in the world is because of fallen angels, the angels who, if one looks in the book of Enoch, were originally responsible for the birth of the race of the giants and much of the discord and evil to be found in the world. As we look further towards the era of Christianity itself in the first century, we can see that Clement and the letter to Barnabas are written after the destruction of the temple, but before the definitive real wiping out of Jerusalem as the center, which takes place after the Second Revolt. The temple is destroyed in 70. Jewish liturgy and Jewish thought begins to migrate more towards the Far East. A secondary center of Jewish scholarship is set up at Jamnia. The Jewish canon is effectively created and closed, and certain decisions are made that affect the Jewish canon, but not specifically the Christian canon. In Jewish tradition, after the destruction of the temple, it is decided that only those texts that were originally created in Hebrew may be maintained in the canon of Jewish scripture, which lets out, or in a sense removes, texts which remain in the Christian canon, certainly for the Catholic and Orthodox churches down to the present time, and they are eventually removed by the Protestant reformers, who recover the principles of Jamnia and discover the reason for the Jewish figures after 70 to have decided that these texts were not legitimate, including such texts as the story of Daniel and Susanna, some of the wisdom literature, particularly the Book of Wisdom and the books of Maccabees, the Book of Tobit. These texts evidently did not have, or several, many of them did not have, did not have Hebrew originals. In the story of Daniel, for example, it can be demonstrated conclusively that the text was originally written in Greek, because a couple of the witticisms that Daniel uses to convict the unjust judges in the story about Susanna only work in Greek. For this reason, some texts are eliminated from the Jewish canon, but they remain legitimate texts for Christians to use for many centuries to come. Another point to bear in mind is that during the era of the early church, there is considerable influence from the Jewish rabbinical tradition, not only in the writings of Paul, but also in the continued rabbinic approach to the understanding of theological questions that takes place in the church, particularly in Palestine and around Jerusalem. This church, which remains important up until the time of the Second Revolt, is primarily headed by Christians who are themselves of Jewish origin. And they remain a very important influence, at least in certain parts of the Eastern Church, and their influence can be discerned in a number of texts that we will be considering, and among them the letters of Clement and Barnabas. I'd invite you to look for more detail at descriptions of these epochs in Jewish history in the text that follows in the lower portion of this page.